Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the view of Jim Baggett's mass and basically a bit of a background story on mass itself. Okay, so Jim Baggett doesn't mean much to most people, or didn't I know before, but YouTube came up with someone. Generally, they have sort of quantum biology, these concepts which, you know, mix two fairly complex ideas together, and you realise, you know, look, these people aren't going to really go too deep into it or talk too much profoundly. But when I saw that someone was going to just talk about mass, I thought, well, that's absolutely fantastic to come across. So that was something I did press, and I thought I'd play. And I was hoping that, obviously, there's sort of a general feeling. Can I say that I have probably none. No, people have got sort of a really in-depth interest in mass and an in-depth interest in quantum physics. So, you know, listen to that. He's obviously famous enough to be the Royal Institute. He was able to talk to it, and let's go and have a little listen to it. And then it just unfolded as basically a car wreck. This basic person doesn't appear to have very much maths. It's just basically reiterated what he's learned at school and put it together in a story, and then written a book, and then actually had to bump around to a few people. I wonder if he would actually ever understand people criticising him all that much. So he has a basic story of mass, which for me was a very fascinating story, but he actually made some assumptions which just made me just rip my hair out. Okay, now as you know, this is going to be a a podcast while driving, and I've got to do several things. I've got to go in and buy a camera mount, a tripod, little low-cost camera mount for this thing that I'm building to just have to get in to fuel up at this enormous 167 cents a litre, my godfather, and I just have to fuel up just enough. I might put $40 in. Okay, I'll talk to you in a short while. That's the story, and I promise that I will give you a real good lowdown on mass. Okay, stopping for now. Okay, we're off again, just fueled up. $40 worth of petrol, just half a tank full. It's rather sad when you come to think that, you know, people would be glad if they earned $20 an hour, and that's 2 hours hard graft. Sort of a bit to get it all in perspective. Okay, now we're talking about mass and this Jim Baggett, I can't remember, and he's on the internet as the know-all of mass. And of course, I have a wide berth, being really, really happy that, you know, you can imagine you're in a pub and you say, "Oh, what's interests you, mate? You know, fishing, shooting, growing your plant, bonsai tree, your children." Oh, look, I'm actually interested in mass and fundamental properties of the universe. Very quickly, you're drinking by yourself. You're also, oh, going to go have a leak and they never come back, and that type of stuff. Not that that actually does happen. So Jim Baggett gives this story, and it unfolds as if I had a student I hadn't taught had gone to the various classes and said, "Oh, look, here's the course. You start off with the ancient Greeks, and then you go straight to Newton, and you look at what the ancient Greeks said." And even there, sort of alarm bells in the very first start. He was talking about mass and matter. The idea of mass wasn't actually part of the table. And And also part of the table is the idea of velocity. The Greeks had position and time. It was a bit rich for them to actually put the two together to get velocity. So this really stumped them. So they were really stumped on a whole lot of things. And he talked about an atom. And without actually saying, an atom means no cut. And this is the idea of whether you could get something and cut it up indefinitely. And people said, eventually you can't cut it. Now, this is a philosophical conjecture. Now, we later found out that there's law of quantum physics saying that as you cut something, at a certain point, it doesn't get smaller, it gets bigger. So therefore, the act of cutting to get something smaller doesn't work. Now, this is something which is found experimentally through advanced maths and stuff, and whole heaps of things. So it's never going to be a conclusion which would come through philosophically. And so this is one of the interesting things, is that philosophy does not get you into quantum physics. In fact, measurements and experiments do. And the philosophy is to actually move the gaze of the human race off wankers on a box and onto experimental outputs. Here we go, around the corner. So essentially, no matter what is said, it's a dead end. Now, he also quoted... So the Greek issue was not what is matter, but what is reality. Is reality just purely sensory? Is it perceptions? So you've got Plato talking about forms and ideas, and Pythagoras talking about ideas. Is something real, or do we perceive it? And so this is like a step before we go into actually, test the matrix, test the glitch in the matrix. That basically they were saying, look, are we in a matrix? Are we, what's going on here? And of course, you're around a campfire at night, opening up your fosters and going, mate, and someone will come up with the idea that, I think we're inside that teddy bear, etc. And their ability to hold the attention of the campfire and build a web story about it is no doubt great. It's that's the magic of the campfire. Now, you could pick up the teddy bear and throw it in and say, go fix that, mate. But I don't know where you can see where that's going. But a lot of the Greek stuff was trying to work this out from first principles. And they could, in actual fact, like groping into a dark cupboard without the light on, feel certain things the way that they must be, the layout of the cupboard of dark space. Epicurus was a sort of a strange person to quote, because his view of matter was really sophisticated in that, in order, matter couldn't be individual particles. The particles had to talk to each other to tell them that I'm a chair. So the left part of the chair had to speak to the right part of the chair. And essentially, his theory of matter actually resulted in modern biology, because this is what essentially a human does. There's all cells, and each part of the cell knows what part of the body it's at. So you suddenly don't have a dick growing out of your face, but I would say so, or something like that. Each part knows what it is. And so, in a sense, Epicurus really was getting down to the basics of biology, and I wouldn't go across there. Then he went across to Newton, and he did actually quote Newton correctly. Newton doesn't get mass. He says, and he also didn't get across the idea that Newton wrote in Latin, and Latin is an ancient language, so it didn't even have the words for something like multiplication. So he quoted cojointly, which was mathematics, and he said that mass is something density divided by the amount of stuff divided by its volume. That's mass. So he actually didn't get to mass itself, and Newton actually only operated in momentum, which is, in actual fact, as far as physics is concerned, a much more descriptive meaningful version of mass. And of course, that means, of course, that Newton, from that perspective, was in fact a experimental philosopher, a physical philosopher. So he said, quite honestly, I feign no hypothesis. I make no hypothesis. I am just basically an instant reporter for God. You know, the universe is God's crime scene. I'm the bobby on the beat taking witness statements. And the answer is the evil genius, or the benign genius of God, getting this all organized together. So we're just doing that. That's Newton himself. And so Newton's doesn't define mass, but he does actually make a reference to Giles of Rome, who's back in this mudwash area of the medieval philosophers. Now, this is where Jim Bigot really got me up in the nose. He quoted from almost Wikipedia, Stanford things, someone who really hasn't understood medieval physics, science. There is really nothing to understand. There is these positions and mindsets to get across. But this person who hasn't... one ignorant person quotes another ignorant person, does not... a quote does not actually qualify anything. So he reads from... Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. I wouldn't quote from it. I read the whole article end to end to actually pick up the nuances. So obviously, the thing about these essays is that it's not a web page, it's not a statement, it's not Wikipedia, it is a philosophical essay. And to get in on a position, they don't give you a snapshot, they give you a stereo picture of three or four different things which construct to go across. And so to quote from it is just nigh on I think you'd object, but no one would understand your objection to. Hopefully you do understand my objection to. But there's this Giles of Rome and the entire existential crisis that they have a religious operating system, and it's been hacked by heretics, by wannabes and stuff like that. And then some hacks come in and they're just so good that they love them. And that's Giles. And one of them is the donation of Constantine. This is where they say, Charlemagne, you're a bit of a... you're a fantastic person. Can I sell you the Holy Roman Empire thing? It's really quality. It doesn't come cheap. It comes with you ceding all the lands, the local lands, to the church. And he says, I don't know. Charlemagne's obviously not going to... That will be, I don't know, in some sort of German or French accent. And I suppose he's German from that area. And the Frankish Empire. And he says, I'll have to have a documentation. It can't be just... I can't be seen to be... that. No, look at this. This is fresh... I mean, old off the monk... This is the donation of Constantine. It says, basically here, I give this land to the Roman Church, and we want the Roman Church. It just happened to be, the Roman Church did have a time with the Byzantine Empire, but eventually we've been raided by Arabic pirates, amazingly. We've been raided up and down the coast. It's raining havoc. We asked for the Byzantine Empire to send a navy, and guess what? It was a Byzantine system, and they just didn't do it on time. And so we just had this in the bottom drawer, and this is the ink, the monastic ink is just drying on it, but this is a contract. There's a story from this. A contract from Constantine himself. Yeah, he was pretty advanced thinking. He was actually using a dialect and languages and words that weren't invented at the time of his writing. He was a forward thinker. And Yeah, put all these things aside, he is a do-go, and the Roman Catholic Church is go. We have a schism, you know, a launch. We have take liftoff here, and really the Dark Ages sort of angst of information, and of course this angst of trying to put square peg in round hole and just declare it so by the divinity of God left so many things. Now there was Nicholas de Cusa and stuff like that who were just coming up against it and said, I don't know about this donation of Constantine. He opened the door to things and saying, look, there's no right or wrong. There's actually ignorance. You've got to be profoundly ignorant. You've got to question. So from the science actually had its origin in church fraud, trying to actually not call out church fraud, because every time you call it out, you get axed. You just want to live your life. So you just say, that huge shopping centre on the mate of that person's land and all the kickback, that's just the way it is. Hopefully we'll do better next time. So there's that sort of thing. And then we had other issues to come across. Now, Giles of Rome had a better name in Latin. He was wrestling with a few things. He was saying, look, people are asking questions. Don't get too caught up on this issue, mate, but the transmutation? You know, this is wine going into the flesh and stuff, blood and things. That's really difficult to handle. And they said, look, just write a huge, long government report on this one. And he did. And the problem with these long reports is that they meander across things. They sort of try to touch on evidence that when other people look at it, they say, hey, this is a treasure trove. The writer actually doesn't quite get it. Now, he also had another problem. So Giles of Rome was basically, if you can imagine, medieval science wasn't really working. Actually, by the time of St. Thomas Aquinas, he was at the high point of holding a ancient system which was falling apart. And St. Thomas Aquinas supported Aristotelian philosophy, which essentially had the seeds of mass in it, seeds of explanation. So Aristotle was, things can be measured. Plato, I don't like him. He's running. I'm in the Lyceum. You've got three groups here in ancient Greece. You can go to Plato's Academy. You know, that's got all the old style, the boater's hat and stuff like that. And they're into play acting and playing badminton and laughing. And I'm in for going for walks and stuff like that. And I'm in for reality, quality, and then the Stoics were off by themselves, sort of like the TAFE, saying, oh, look, I don't think we should, Plato, Aristotle, we're not going to have a main person, we're going to have a basically thing. And Stoic, that means painted porch, so hopefully people are not going to put too much influence on a school of thought, which is actually named Painted Porch School of Thought. Okay, so Aristotle had laid St. Thomas Aquinas had sort of given Aquinas basically a de facto, Aristotle a de facto seal of it's pagan, but God's actually pointed at this piece of pagan philosophy to go across. And then he had this problem. He said, look, there's two. Aristotle had he said there's two types of matter. So the word matter was coming along. Mass hadn't come into existence yet. So this is the entire, this Jim Pigott, or Bigot, it couldn't be Jim Bigot. Jim Pigott must be, said, oh, this is rubbish. But in fact, they were at this, you can imagine this crisis resolution process, internal process, actually spilt over to looking at the ancient world. And part of the ancient world, to describe what was going on, is saying that you have sort of parabolic motion, parabolic rock throwing motion. That's where I throw a rock and eventually it hits something and pops down. Pops down. Incidentally, I am absolutely boiling because in this car, I'm in the sun. I can't tell you what the temperature is outside or I'll have a crash. But I'm not running the air conditioner because the air conditioner ruins the podcast. So I am suffering for your ears. How about that? I'm a sort of a martyr, science martyr for you. Okay, and also trying not to get killed in the process. I just have to really, really concentrate about how I'm going to do this maneuver. I've got to get to... an aside. So we've had bushfires, flooding rain, that is several years worth of rain happened in a day, two or three days, continuous rain, so that's quite a lot to get happening. Okay, I'm just going to push along here, and of course, you know, fire, rain, the NBN comes after several weeks late, just in time. This is the national board, this is the fiber to the home, for a lightning bolt to hit our area and blow the bejesus out of everything. And for which it was, have you actually put in the after it's all blown, did you actually put in the I was trying to think of the word for it. Mentally, also, I've got to pay attention to where I'm going at the moment. Have you put in the lightning-proof power board? Of course, I had to research it. And apparently, I'd become possessed and said, nah, you don't need it for this. These have their own fault protection on it. As if I'd ever say that. But apparently, in terms of stupor, I would have, may have said something like that. So I'm just going now just to buy power board. And this is classically bolting the stable, locking the stable door after the horses bolted. So, whereas, as I often start off with that one, bolting the stable door after the horses, a bit stuffed them. Okay, so that's what I'm doing at the moment. So Giles of Rome had to actually come in. So these are lawyers, mind you, has to actually come up with a legal argument which can get us out of something which is befuddling the medieval people, that God has two types of matter. He has earth matter, which is that grindingly boring, stupid matter which stops. Oh my God, Father, are we in the Armageddon? Why is this such a piss poor opposition? Sorry, I'm going to have to stop now and park this godforsaken vehicle. Okay, we're back broadcasting again. Those people who know that I'm broadcasting from my car as I drive will be used to the sort of brakes, and I've just come through perhaps not the car park from hell, but essentially there's a difference between computer modelling and reality, and I think I experienced that. There's computer modelled car park with spaces just big enough for cars of the future, sort of self-parking smaller cars in this gigantic tank that I've got here. Just coming across here. Okay, we're talking about mass, and mass. I love. I just find it the most. It's got a huge attraction to me, this particular concept, And we've got Giles of Rome, a bloody lawyer, trying to actually sort of paper over some glaring gaps in the ancient theology, which has been ported into Christian philosophy. And this says, look, there's two types of matters. There's celestial matter. Oh, what the fuck am I doing? Okay. Oops. Okay. I'm digging the microphone back to me. I'm going to have to one day get a proper mount for it. Isn't that crazy? Okay, so this celestial matter, which is heavenly and is God has blessed such that it doesn't slow down. So the moon can orbit the earth. Okay, the Greeks are saying this. The moon can go around the earth. Things can keep on going around forever and ever and not stop because it's part of God's world. Whereas the bloody hell, we've got a second-rate world, second-rate matter. So you've got two different types of matter. Well, and he got into some really complex mind jam. And out of that mind jam came the concept of matter, of mass. And he said it's something which is held between celestial and earthly matter. The mass is the same. So no mathematical context, no association with weight or anything else like that. It's just there. So this sort of basically shadow of a concept was leapt on a coin by Newton. And he said, oh, look, this general concept. So the concept was there. Newton obviously didn't read Giles of Rome. However, he was, you know, it's in a religious area. In fact, you've got to remember all philosophy and thought at the time of Newton, it was still in its medieval, it was still medieval, transitioning just past the into the Renaissance, but it was still not late. So no, it's you can imagine that as today, educational institutions aren't really up with the rest of the population. They were still doing about, it's all about God, folks, and it's sort of like you want a grant application to research. I just can't see this large section A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, which has to be how it proves God, how it worships God, all this type of stuff. So Newton said, oh, my research is just talking about how God operates, obviously, and so there's all this basic reference to God and all that type of stuff. So Giles of Rome's work would have come across there. So it's really important that the origin of mass is an idea of an essence of an object associated with its reality. Sort of like it's in the cross that Aristotle just said, hang on, there is such thing as reality. Let's go what he said. There is such a provable universe and that they're going to rule the line underneath that and then have huge amounts of circular arguments which never end to go across. And then this is in a really complex way, comes up with the seed of the idea. It's sort of like thinking of something before you've got the finance in and the people involved. You say, oh gosh, you're a person, you come into a virgin Amazon forest and say, oh, I could log this and have cattle farmers, and all you do is you've just got a backpack and you just die. And that's sort of like the sense the idea of mass came across before any of the preliminary things. Then Newton started the great unpacking of mass. So in a sense, this Jim Person touched on it in that mass is not a thing, it's a concept. It's a concept. Mass doesn't is a property of something. It's not necessarily a property. It manifests itself as a property, but it's a concept. And in a sense, he actually got that spot on. Now, mass does appear. You've got to basically have followed several sitcoms. You've got to follow the Gravity sitcom, the Kung Fu sitcom, the Taekwondo, where people hit each other sitcom of physics. Then you've got to get the Einstein World War II atomic bomb thing, where energy is mass, your mass energy equivalent. So mass is part of is a manifestation of space, and I can travel through space, and so as I travel through space, I change my mass. So like mass and time are very much in a similar category, and we have a lot of our fundamental contents are per second or per kilogram, and H is sort of, if you're looking at this cadre of concepts, H is out there. H, the Planck's constant, is some sort of like a scale content. It's sort of, H is a bit like the bit rate of the universe. It's pretty amazing to get H. H is an angular momentum. Whoa! And it's an action. And so all these things are the most fundamental units are not actually mass and time. It's momentum and action. Action is energy, integral of energy over time. It's sort of like the action of a ball going up. The energy slows, goes up and down as you go through it. It's sort of a very interesting way of saying that something orbits through a physical space, but it's also orbiting through a mathematical space. Okay, getting onto mass, just Jim didn't say this, but for me, I liken it to this. You're some sort of pimply youth, and you fantasize about this ideal woman, which doesn't exist. The ideal woman does exist, obviously, it's the one that you're closest to, blah 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 blah. But I fantasize it, and you go to different gigs. You go to the gravity gig, and you say, "Well, mass is this thing that things have, and the amount of mass it has is equal to the amount of gravitational pull it has." Now, obviously there's a limit to what you can say there, and then there's another gig where you go and it's kickboxing, fighting, and mass is the amount of hurt you feel, because that's sort of the mass of that person's leg and velocity going to breaks your sternum. You go, "Oh, that bloody hell is mass." So that is M1, a big G, which is just a number pulled out of Newton's bum. M1, M2 on R squared space. And this is very much sort of like, to me it's like a kindergarten drawing of physics, seeing that formula. It's sort of like, it is much more satisfying as Einstein's general relativity equations. However, you've got that one, then you have F equals ma. And basically, Newton had a circular definition of mass, and all his definitions are ultimately circular, because he doesn't make a hypothesis, he doesn't actually work it through. Now, can I say, I'm now got the air conditioning on, so perhaps the quality of this podcast sound has gone down a bit, but being only 27 degrees outside and the humidity here, given a year's rain, we've just finished, we've got blue skies at the moment. Yeah, so that there, and there's sort of cars going, people dying, and all this type of stuff. This typical post-range lunacy, which happens in Australia. The extreme weather just wears down people's caution. Now, not obviously, people know to be cautious after this type of stuff. It's the inexperienced people. Oh, shit. Like, I would have been cleaned up by that car. Had no sort of sense of slowing down. So in Australia, it's this genteel world that if you want to merge, the other cars have to let you in. In theory, of course, you'd be awake for it. So it is sort of gentry here. Okay, we're on to mass. We've got two masses. We've got the F equals ma mass there, that momentum sort of mass. Those masses are plugged bloody hell into the Higgs boson. You can, that's the explanation, mate. And or at least the momentum mass is Higgs boson world, so it's really linked in there beautifully. Still hard to work out. But then you've got the E equals MC squared, which is really important, because if, at the end of this day, my mate Jim, just gave this really annoying sort of, oh, if we open up a Russian doll of every tiny and tiny in China, and he actually ignores the quantum truth that tiny becomes big and stuffs your story up. But and things no longer move in the quantum space in the way that we understand them moving. Things are not jiggly, they're just got their imaginary component begins to oscillate like banana rubbish. It's an amazing story to come across. There's the E equals MC squared, which means that if you make your particle up and it has a lot of force holding it together, the force means a lot of acceleration, means a lot of speed, and so your particle is just sitting there, but it doesn't have motion as we understand it. It has quantum mechanical motion inside it, and that quantum mechanical motion corresponds to enormous frame speed, which means it corresponds to an enormous amount of frame trapped energy, which is another way of talking about mass, the E equals MC squared. So if I can unleash that frame trapped energy into my other frame, the frame that I exist, rather than this all in a private, it's sort of like private energy, mass of particle, or most of the mass of particle is private energy. Now, for an electron, you've got this other thing. There is this other thing which is fundamentally it's Higgs field interaction, this non-imploded mass to come across. So you've got all those things coming across, and you've also got the space. That a light particle, which is massless, has a unit associated with it, which has got a mass in it, the H across there. And the final part of the puzzle, which is the really incredible part, and sort of makes sense because it's the quantum mechanical stuff, which says that momentum mass, the less mass it is, the larger it is. Or the less mass is less momentum and less curvature. So it all goes into cascade and links us through that mass unit H. In fact, how one could define how one could talk about mass without talking about H. And ultimately, our measurement of the kilogram, we have said, in this advanced thought, there is no longer a chunk of space space with energy locked into it, which is a particle. There's no chunk I can pick up and say that's 1 kilogram. I can actually define it directly by other constants by looking at H. So ultimately, the unit of mass, the kilogram, is defined by H. And really, that's the end point of your story. Mass is something of fucking dead. Oh, hang out here. Nothing worse. So it's just pandemonium here, mate. I'm sure people in other countries we're really not used to a lane being closed. That's just the most insane thing. I just hope that there's not been another bloody accident. Oh, no, it looks as though there's enough people here. I wonder what they're doing. Okay, yeah, so really the end story is, Jim's story is, I'm fig jam, fuck I'm great, just ask me, buy my book. Was it BMB? Oh, I wish it would buy up my book. Something like Fig Jam Bumper, which is there. And there's this story which says this sort of homey feeling, she was there. My teachers aren't that stupid. they haven't studied anything or really thought any original thoughts for a long time. They're not that stupid, because I've watched Jim's thing, I've read books, Jim's, and he's sort of just gone, and he's sort of missed the integrity of H and the four, oh my godfather, the four, and I'm just seeing these trees, lovely, they've been sort of, it's been an Armageddon of, there's been storms through Sydney, and you can see, if you know where to look, little bits and pieces, pieces across it. Now if I could say, what's this thing that you've been told, the reality of it, and you know, how dare someone actually wake you up to reality, to be on the shoulder. Now the reason is, I think there is actually a reason, is that it's not that Australia's, oh look, Australia is a little bit more dangerous in some aspects. I'm just going to try and actually get through. Oh no, I'll just go through here. Oh, blood oath. It's a nightmare, mate. It's a nightmare. This is the central group. In as much that often what the tourists are told, or what the tour company tells you, you're sort of like a local to science. You get the gift, the thing. So in essence, just say for you're up northern Australia, and the whole of northern Australia, if you look at the this big line, says crocodile country, and so you could actually be nervous the whole time, or you could not be nervous. You could live for a long time, and then you move to a new section which appears dry, but over the hill is a creek in a billabong, and there's a big monster in it. What happens is that people just basically, you're at a remote shop and stuff like that, and they say, "Oh, what are you doing? Oh, I wouldn't do that." And they'll tell you of the croc. This is a bit crocodile. It's not crocodile. Crocodile Dundee's just ridiculous. But they will tell you of a croc story. And what happens is, in general, most of the tourists get eaten, but people do have scares. And that scare goes in, and a generation will tell you, "Oh, look, there's a croc's up there, and be aware." And they sort of know the story's there. So this is really sort of trying to give you the bush wisdom of what mass is, and without denigrating too much the tour companies, but there's that. I really believe that this Jim, whatever his face is very much a sort of a Disney view of mass, and it's enough to make one cry, because he's interested in selling his merchandise for it, which is okay, but I'm interested in you surviving in physics, surviving in the world of physics if you ever venture out into it. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm off to visit my mate, Tim. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.